Hi everyone and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This is a very Sydney Kings centric podcast. They've been all over the news with the signings of Didi Luzada and now Jayshon Tate. This is very interesting times, and to dissect those happenings I have brought in Matt McQuaid. Matt McQuaid is well known to basketball circles. He's worked on Pro Basketball Today. He's worked with the Sydney Kings, NBL TV and the number one draft picked Academy. He's done radio, print, TV, you name it, anything you can do in basketball in Sydney or Australia. Matt's got his hand all over it and is a wealth of knowledge about basketball and the Kings. So it's great to have his input on these topics is what we talk about. Obviously, the new import, Tate, Beveridge and how likely he was to sign in Sydney and why they've gone with the Will Weaver direction. Andrew Bogut as a player and also as an owner going forward into next season and perhaps potentially further. We talk about the other next stars outside of Luzada, who we talk about in terms of that 3-4 spot with He, Newley, Muller, and others. We talk about Melbourne United's overhaul of their roster. We talk about the schedule and how it relates to the Kings and their run. And then we just talk about Matt's future and past work in journalism and books. A little bit of a heads up, we recorded most of this episode before Tate was signed, and then we recorded a little bit after. I've recorded the most recent stuff, or the most recently recorded stuff about Tate, I've put right at the beginning, and then the older stuff I've put towards the back. It all should flow pretty well, but just keep that in mind. All right, everyone, thanks very much, and I hope you enjoy Matt McQuaid.
Matt, the bit we cut out, we were talking about who the Kings were going to sign with what would have been their second import slot. They've signed their player. How do you pronounce his name?
Jayshon Tate.
Jayshon Tate.
So Jayshon is mm-hmm. how it's pronounced. And yeah, it's a very
has he arrived in Sydney yet?
No, he hasn't. No, he's still in the States, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. But he'll arrive shortly. I'm not sure whether he'll be in before the end of the mini camp that they're currently on at the moment. Yeah. But I would suspect he'd certainly be in no later than first couple of weeks of August, I would think.
Your first impression, had you heard of him before the name was announced?
I have. Yes to both questions. I have, and I'd seen him play in college. He went to Ohio State and actually played with D'Angelo Russell as a freshman, interestingly enough. D'Angelo Russell, of course, recently signing with the Golden State Warriors for that $100 million plus contract, former number two pick for the LA Lakers. So, yeah, I'd seen him in college, obviously seen a little bit of him in summer league. He's been playing spent a season in Belgium in the last year, where he averaged around about 12 points, about 5 rebounds a game, mm-hmm. sort of not really earth-shattering numbers. And yeah, look, it's an interesting selection. He's certainly not the 6'8", 6'9" guy that a lot of people expected. You know, the kind of the big, I guess, for those in the older generation would remember kind of a Kenny McClary type that people were sort of thinking about, 6'7", 6'8", just absolute monster. This guy's, he's 6'4", he's about 230, which I guess I can't do kilos and centimetres.
Yeah, I've got him totally in front of me. Let me have a look here.
Yeah, so he's about 6'4", 230. Yeah, 104 kilo, let's say. So very solidly built, no doubt.
Yeah, very
he's built. And as you know, as Will has described him, he's very much an energy guy, great teammate, can defend a number of positions on the floor. He can come up with his fair share of highlights. Look, it's a very, very interesting selection as your import if you're saying that he's going to be playing the four spot. Because when you look around at the league and you look at the guys playing four, you're talking about the likes of Nicholas Kay, you're talking about Ty Wesley, you're talking about Eric Griffin in Adelaide, who I think is going to be a star. You're talking about, you know, obviously the monsters they've got in Illawarra, like an AJ Ogilvie or a David Anderson, who will probably play the four spot unless they go small with Timmy Conrad there. But and I'm, you know, obviously forgetting a bunch of people, but it's interesting. You know, time will tell. They think very highly of him, and clearly they think he'll fit what Will is trying to do, particularly with this group. Hey, look, you know, the one thing that I kind of thought about, you know, most people would sort of look at the signing and go, who is Jayshon Tate? Well, back in 1994, and again, I'm showing my age, that there were a lot of people who said in Sydney, who the hell is Leon Trimingham when he came? Now, obviously, Leon Trimingham was a very special case because Leon Trimingham was this incredible, spectacular athlete that, you know, we'd rarely seen his type, and he was just a massive hit. And it was a different time. You know, the Australian content clearly around the league at that time in the NBL was nowhere near what it is today. And the NBL, as far as its playing strength is concerned and the talent level, is obviously not comparable today to what it was in 94. But it's kind of this, I kind of, if you want to look at it from a positive standpoint, you know, Trimingham was a guy, Bob Turner, people thought Bob was nuts. What are you doing? Who is this guy? You know, because again, he'd sacked Dwayne McLean, who of course was an absolute megastar. Everyone knew who he was. And then you go to this guy called Leon Trimingham, and people are questioning, well, you know, why are you doing this? And it turned out exceptionally well for the two seasons Leon was here. So I guess that's a positive spin on it. He doesn't seem to fit the need of that kind of big rebounding. Defending, rim running, you know, someone to help Bogut out, defending the rim. He's more of a kind of a Draymond Green energy type, I guess, if you want to make an NBA comparison, a guy that will come in and do a lot of things. He's very, you know, he's pretty athletic. He's very strong. He's powerful in the low block. You know, if you have a look at some of his highlights on YouTube, you know, one of the things he's very adept at, he's got a really nice drop step, a nice spin move to the rim, can go either way. And he's got a quick jump as well, which is going to be very important against some of the bigger guys that he'll go up against in this league. So, look, it's like everything else, you know, with an import, it's every year's the same. It's the old import lottery. You know, you either strike gold or you strike out. It's as simple as that. And the Kings are hoping they've struck gold with this guy.
I think when we talk about it last time, like rebounding clearly from last year was the imperative for this team. You know, they have the league's leading rebounder, but we'll finish near last in offensive rebounding or lack of going on. I mean, will he? The big question for them, I'd assume, is will he grab rebounds? Is he going to be an upper echelon? Is he going to be a starter? Do you think?
Well, it really is a fascinating scenario to see whether he will actually start, because when you look at it, you know, you bring in a Craig Moller, and Craig Moller is going to, you know, ostensibly was brought in to back up the 4-3 play, and Craig was going to play most of his minutes at the 4 and then do some backup at the 3. Obviously, you bring in Luzada. I'm hearing now that Luzada is probably going to back up the 2 primarily, so they're going to use him as a 2-3 rather than a 3-2, which that in itself is very interesting.
I didn't
because
see
if
that.
You add into that, if you add into that rotation with Lish and Ware and Sean Bruce, and you, that kind of, if they feel like he's got the capability to play the 2 spot, that makes things extremely interesting. Then that kind of opens it up for Newley and Tate to kind of share minutes at the 3. And then you're looking at, then obviously you're looking at the rotation with potentially Moller and Kickett, then looking at them and remembering there's still another spot to come. Now, my understanding is they won't be going with an import at this stage for that final spot. So that lends the question, you know, who will they look at? So I would be targeting someone along the lines of maybe, and I'm just throwing names out here. I just want to be very, very clear. I have no intelligence on what they're going to do. It's
just someone talking guff.
Someone like the one guy I kind of, you know, it was mentioned to me by someone, and I thought that would make a lot of sense, would be Lucas Walker as an example of someone
that.
Who's got that size, got that, you know, he's obviously not, he's past his prime, but
insurance
experience as an insurance guy, he's had experience with, you know, the Australian team, obviously. So there's that little connection. Again, I have no intelligence to say one way or another, but that's kind of an interesting name. Or they could look at, to be honest with you, originally the understanding that they were going to go the 3 import route and they may not is my understanding now, which means, you know, I haven't really had a chance to sort of look at who's out there still. You know, there's questions about who is left, because you've still got a lot of teams, or one team in particular, Cairns, who have yet to complete their roster. You know, there's a couple of teams out there that haven't done that yet that still are looking for guys. So it's potential that there's a potential that the Kings will be competing with other teams for players. So, you know, then it might come down to money. It might come down to opportunity. It might come down to well, do you want a chance at winning a championship, or do you, are you after minutes, or what, you know, what are you after? And that'll be a very, very interesting thing to see. But, you know, at the end of the day, they still have that flexibility. So that having that spot there means that over the, there's no great rush to actually fill it. They've still got, you know, a month or two before preseason kicks off. They've obviously got, you know, the World Cup and all the pre-World Cup games to worry about. So from that standpoint, where Will's going to be away, Bogut's going to be away.
Yeah, so from
that standpoint, it's probably, you don't necessarily need to bring someone in until they get everybody in together. It's not ideal. Don't get me wrong. It's certainly not ideal. Mm. However, I tend to think that they're not so concerned about it. And if somehow, you know, that they get presented with a guy that that's an import that might be a fit and might be a fit budget-wise for them, then you never know. They might go down that path.
Let's say if you were sitting there and you were an imaginary Paul Smith and Will Weaver and the Sydney Kings ownership, would you, and putting money aside, if it's not an issue, would you have signed Deshaun Tate, or would you have signed someone like Cam Bester?
I would have gone bigger personally. Yeah, I would have gone bigger.
Yeah,
I just think it was such an issue last year, you know. And look, you can say, and rightly so, that it's a different season. That they've got a completely new coaching staff. Everybody that was there last year is gone from the coaching staff, so it's totally different. You know, you bring in Luke Longley, you bring in Alex Marich, you've got James Duncan, who's coming in as an assistant now. Adam Ford, who is just a tremendous asset. He has shown that with the Perth Wildcats. No one works harder. No one works smarter. He's absolutely tremendous. He's one of the underrated great pickups for this team. There's no two ways about it. Adam Ford was a brilliant pickup for them. So you look at it from that perspective and you go, well, you know, Will's going to play a different way. He's going to have a different style. He's going to throw different looks out there. Yeah. So maybe he's got a plan to maximise what he's got to improve that rebounding deficiency. And it was a huge deficiency. As you mentioned, they had the best rebounder in the league and they were the worst team in the league in giving up offensive rebounds, and it hurt them just way too much.
I agree with you there. Game. I think not only personnel, it's also rebounding is also a bit of culture as well. And
it is.
My question to you is,
he'll do that.
My question as well is, like, where does this put Kickett? You know, where does he now slot into the team? You know, it's a guy who's sort of right in his position, seems to do a lot of the same things, but younger, more athletic, but not the shooter, I don't think. But again, it's just, what do you think?
Well, I think ultimately the plan will be to play him more as a backup to Andrew, you know, sort of as a different look, because clearly he's not going to be able to play the four spot, I don't think. You know, I think he's a classic stretch five. I think the fact of the matter is he doesn't rebound. You know, that's not his game. You know, he's not a guy that you can count on to grab 5, 6, 7 rebounds a game. It's just not his game. That's no slight on him. It's just that's not his game. His game is as an offensive guy who defensively can help you by being kind of a guy that is really a quarterback type, you know, who talks out the switches, who talks the mismatches, who gets people in the right spots, that type of thing. In terms of a power rebounder, no, clearly that's not him. That's not who he is. He's a guy that you could probably get 10, you know, you want to get 10, 15 points a game in 20 minutes at a really efficient rate, which he does tremendously well. That's his game. He's smart. He's an excellent passer. He does all those things offensively. I think defensively, you know, that's where, or not so much defensively, but on the boards is where he struggles and where they need more out of that spot. You know, that's why I think it's going to be a real it's going to be out by committee, I think. There's no doubt about that. I think Tate, you know, if you look at Tate's numbers in college, you know, he did pretty well on a per 40-minute basis, I think. You know, but not, we're not talking the second coming of Zion Williamson here, you know, like as an undersized forward. He's clearly not that. Moller has shown he can get on the glass, Tate can get on the glass. I think Newley will be getting on the glass a bit more as well. They'll look to do that. Lish is a guy that gets on the glass. It, as you said before, a lot of it really, it's a mentality. It's a culture. You know, it's just, it's that want to rebound. It's that want to box out. It's that want to get physical, to grab that board. A lot of it's just desire. And, you know, and that comes from your culture, and that comes from the input from your coaching group and your leadership from guys like Andrew Bogut. And I think that's probably how they're going to do it. That's where I think Lucas Walker is really interesting, because I think someone with that body shape, someone who's still a great athlete, even though obviously he's slowing down, but he's got a bit of size about him. He can get on the glass. He can do a lot of those things. That's the kind of, I still think that's the kind of player they need. They're kind of,
That makes sense.
They're lacking a little bit in that regard. And that's why I think they might go for that. Well, again, whether it's an Australian or an import, I think they still need something like that. Some guy who really is a role-playing type, who's there to really just rebound and defend.
Do you think, how much of this do you think is monetary? Like, I don't have no idea what Tate's on. I mean, it's not public. But, I mean, it does seem like they've put their lot in. And tell me if you agree with the strategy. It appears as though the Kings have gone, yep, we're going with our highest paid players, which are Casper and Bogut. They are two of the top five players in the league. They're going with those. And then the other positions, they're kind of a bit of a lolly scramble, see what comes up game to game, seemingly. Do you think that's a good strategy? And how much do you think financials were a part of this Tate signing?
Well, without, you know, having an intimate, you know, knowledge, because obviously, you know, they don't publicise salaries in the league. So you really, the reality is people are guessing as to what he's being paid.
Yeah.
You know, if from a high level view, I think it certainly had something to do with it. I think, you know, what people have to realise is that, you know, the previous ownership, AEG Ogden, you know, we were talking about a company that's a billion-dollar corporation with tremendous resources. And, you know, Harvey Lister was a tremendous CEO because he basically let the basketball department, you know, what do you need? So let them go. He, you know, obviously they had a budget, but they obviously had a lot of money to spend when you consider the players they kind of brought in and out over the three seasons that they had there and the money they were prepared to pay for the likes of Kevin Lish, the likes of Brad Newley, who certainly weren't cheap coming back from, you know, Newley from Europe. Yep. And then finally, obviously getting Andrew Bogut, which, you know, obviously he clearly didn't come cheap. So from that perspective, I don't know whether Paul Smith, you know, who I'm sure is a very wealthy man, very successful man, whether or not he had the same kind of resources.
Yeah.
And as AG Ogden did. And again, it's purely speculation because, as I said, the salaries are not publicised. To some people's consternation, I get all of that, but that's fine. That's the way the NBL runs and the Players Association go along with that. So from that perspective,
why do you think that is?
Only a guess.
Do you think they don't publicise them so that – because obviously if you publicise them, maybe the salaries go up. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm not sure. You know, I don't think there's always been that question about it. But to be honest with you, I couldn't give you an answer. I don't know why they don't do it. I mean, obviously, the interesting thing about the NBL is how much they're trying to be more like the NBA.
Yeah.
And the NBA's obviously been very, very clear on things that have happened. You know, they're very transparent. They want to ensure an even playing field. Even though I'm not saying that the NBL doesn't want to ensure an even playing field, I'm sure they do, because you know you can't have a competition with just four teams. You know, let's face it. You know, you need to. That's why the equalisation tax came in, to help those other teams that weren't hitting the salary cap floor to build up. And I think from that perspective, you know, you can't say that the NBL isn't committed to all of that and making sure it is a level playing field. But in terms of publicising it, look, you know, I really couldn't say. And then sort of getting back to your question, I do think probably the budget had a lot to do with it, because at the end of the day, and someone once told me, and it's very true, you know, when you look historically at some of the great teams in the league and even some of the great NBA teams of the past, you know, the one thing that was a big key is that they had a great one and a great five. Well, the Kings have got, and then they build around that. The Kings have got a great one and a great five. There's no
doubt
about it.
A lot of switchability. Yeah. I think after this signing, I was kind of sitting there. I had really two schools of thought. I thought one was, they've really kind of gone in a direction that didn't address a huge need from last season. It is last season, but nonetheless. But then on the other hand, I was like, well, they still have arguably the best five and the best one.
Yeah, no doubt.
Top two, three at the if you put them at their lowest rung. So it's a question of what's got more value in the NBL. Would you prefer to spend twice as much on Casper Ware or get two players at half the, you know? So I actually go with the strategy. I think it's going to be, I think it's a good thing. I think the storylines that you come up with for the two things comes that first day for the Kings, who's going to start? Who is going to be the starting five come first day? That's the big storyline. And then also, is Chris Goulding going to start in Melbourne on day one as well? So
that's great, big
storylines about just the starting fives going into that first game.
Yeah, it really does. It's tremendous for the media, isn't it? And for the fans, because it's going to be a giant guessing game, particularly with the Kings, because you know, this is a guy who's really, when you look at it, he's a three. When they've said they were looking at a dynamic 4-3 type, and he's not really that. Yes, dynamic in terms of he's very much an energy guy, does a lot of different things on the floor, but I think most people were expecting that either
quintessential
kind of long 6'8", 6'9", maybe 6'10".
David Ware.
Running guy. Yeah, I wouldn't go there, but a much better version, David Ware.
Do you know if he had, did he have other interest from other NBL clubs? Tate?
No, I'm not entirely sure. Yeah, he was definitely a bit out of left field. Look, he may very well have, simply for the fact that he was in Summer League and every NBL team was there. Obviously saw him and there, as I said, there are teams like a Cairns, for example, who haven't filled their import quotas yet, who they might have been taking a hard look at him. Yeah, it's very possible.
Exciting times for the NBL, though, right?
Oh, it's unbelievable, isn't it? You know, Brad Rosen and I have this conversation every year about how the league's improved, and it's been, especially the last 3 or 4 years, every time if we call a game for the Kings or whatever, that's sort of what we lead with, is how exciting is this league? And it's another level. It's another level. Last year it was Bogut, and now this year it's about the next star.
It's taken a huge jump this year. I feel like last year was a big step and jump. This year feels like a real, it's now starting to put on so much more weight. It's retaining players. It's a real solidification of the league.
It's that, and it's also what you're looking at is getting the eyes from overseas. That's the key. Yeah. You know, it's not just a one-time deal with Terence Ferguson, for example. This is kind of okay, we're actually going to this league to improve ourselves and to get to the NBA, and we actually think this is better for us than college. I mean who they are specifically. So yeah, it's remarkable.
Do you think just on that with the next stars, so much is up in the air with LaMelo Ball. I think it's really overblown. His, the family and things. It seems to be just a young kid who's coming out here to play. What do you think? Was Sydney at all keen at all?
No, not really. I think, I've sort of heard a couple of your podcasts when you've been talking about how the Next Stars program works, and Jeff explained it extremely well. On his podcast, and I mean, he would know as the ex-GM of the Kings. But yeah, look, I think I agree to an extent. I think it's exciting. You know, I'm not a fan of his father, and I'm not a fan. I don't know anybody who is really of the antics. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at this kid, he's got 4.7 million Instagram followers. Wollongong's got 300,000 people in their population, full stop. So you sort of look at it from a cultural aspect and you think, and I've said this on social media, that I believe that the Wollongong City Council should use this kid as a walking tourism advertisement, for all the great beaches and Wollongong, come to Wollongong. Yep. Just don't let him take photos of the snake pit. And those who are listening, they're in Wollongong, know exactly what I mean. I used to play there as well back in the day. So I went to the University of Wollongong, as it turns
out. Sure.
But it is overblown. He's coming in with his kind of personal trainer come mentor guy, Jermaine Jackson. And look, his dad will be here. There is no question about it. One of the interesting things, and you would have seen it if anybody has watched the great work that Liam Santamaria and Cameron Luke did for the NBL in the Las Vegas Summer League, one of the interviews they did was with RJ Hampton's dad, Rod Hampton. Who apparently is basically another version of LaVar Ball.
Not
to the same notoriety.
Not aggressive, I guess.
Not to the same notoriety as LaVar. Yeah. but he's that kind of guy. And so we're going to, so there's that to deal with. And you know, the one issue I have, or the one question mark potentially, I think, is Matt Flynn as a rookie head coach. You know, I think there's a lot of question marks over Matt for mine. And I've known Matt for years. I mean, I've known him very, very well. He's been around a long time. He's been under, you know, a lot of really, really good coaches. So, you know, he's now in a situation where he's bringing this kid in, and all the eyes of the basketball world are going to be on him. And is there going to be pressure to give this kid minutes, whether implied or direct? You know, there's a lot of question marks. Now, this kid's incredibly talented. I think this kid's the most talented of the three kids. I really do. I think he's outstanding.
Out of Armstrong, Hampton, and he.
No, sorry, out of the Ball family.
The Ball family. Yeah. Lonzo.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, and I saw, you know, I actually called when Lonzo was here for UCLA. They played Sydney Uni, and I called that game and with Brad Rosen. It's Warren Rosen, sorry, his brother. And yeah, you know, I thought he was exceptional, but he actually came off the bench in that game. And then obviously I've followed him very, very closely in college and through into the pros. And I've seen a lot of this kid, a lot of LaMelo. And I think, you know, he's obviously physically got a lot of growing to do. And that's, you know, that's fairly obvious given his age.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's got a lot of work to do on a number of things. I'm still, he can shoot the ball, but I'm not mad about his mechanics, the same as his brother. But his vision is incredible. You obviously question the level of play. Now, I know he's played in Lithuania, but that, you know,
Have you seen footage of it?
Yeah.
I've been meaning to get in touch with someone from that league, because his end there was not a good ending. Probably the worst ending you can have in basketball, where he got hurt. And I think LaVar was saying, he should get more minutes, and then just yanked him out of the league. Not a good look.
Yeah, no, that's right. But having said that, you would believe that he would have learnt from that experience, by all accounts.
Yeah.
He's a really good kid, you know, and I think he's carried himself magnificently. And yeah, we sort of talked about this earlier. You know, the eyes of the world are on the NBL. When you know, he's going on ESPN The Jump, they're going on Get Up, or it was either The Jump or Get Up One, and, you know, RJ Hampton's doing the same thing. And you got guys like Frank Fischler talking about the league, and other guys saying, look, this NBL is for real, and it's extraordinary. We just haven't seen anything like this ever, you know. And I don't think, you know, we really still don't quite understand how big this Next Stars is going to be this year, not just because of RJ and LaMelo, but obviously Terry Armstrong, and then you've got, you know, Didi Luzada for the Kings, and then there's going to be more of these guys, excuse me, coming out. So it hasn't finished yet. I mean, Perth is the one I kind of look at and go, well, you know,
yeah,
they're the one that makes the most sense as well.
Like they're the most established. Yeah,
they do. Yeah, they do. And also, you know, you sort of put two and two together. Trevor doing his assistant coach role with the Indiana Pacers at the Las Vegas Summer League. So, you know, CJ Bruton for the Toronto Raptors as well. So there's a lot of guys out there that are looking at these kids, these second round potential draft and stash candidates, now that they've changed the rules for Next Stars, gives just the enormous flexibility to these clubs, particularly since the NBL pays their wages, which is a huge thing. All the clubs have to do is room and board, put them through the program. And they'll have, there's different requirements. I mean, obviously, Luzada with the Kings is going to be interesting because he still can't speak English. And one of the reasons he's coming here is to learn English. He'll have his interpreter with him all the time. But
Rosetta Stone subscription.
That's right. Yeah. So that's going to be interesting to see how that all pans out. But
definitely.
Yeah. I just think, you know, getting back to the question, the NBL 20 is just, well, I mean, can't wait. You know, I mean, and then even more exciting, you've got the Blitz coming up in Tasmania, and you've got, you know, as Liam Santa Maria said, that there's going to be 20 scouts there, 20, 25 scouts there. I mean, just to give you an idea of how big it's going to be, when we did the Blitz in Brisbane in 2016, that was Terrence Ferguson's first year. So that was when Terrence Ferguson came out. We would look behind our commentary position, and there'd be, without a word of a lie, 15 NBA, not just scouts, high-level guys. We were talking about vice presidents. Tim Connolly was there. from the Nuggets or the Wizards at the time, I think it was. And yeah, it was in vice presidents, and there was you know, directors of player personnel and GMs, yeah. And it was unbelievable. That's going to be times 10, because yeah. RJ Hampton is going to be a top 5 pick in the lottery. People don't understand this. Yeah, he is the real deal, this kid.
He's the one I like of the three. He's the one I like the most.
Well, you don't get recruited by Bill Self, the University of Kansas, unless you've got serious game and you can help that program. You just don't. And that's why it's so huge for him in particular to come down, because you know, he could have written his own ticket in college. And that's the thing. He had every major program after him. That is a big deal. We've never, ever seen that before. Someone kind of going, look, college is not for me. I want to go play. And he could have played anywhere. He could have made $1 million in China without a problem.
Yeah,
no, I mean, that's the thing. That's the other thing that's happening, is that there was a case where you could say it wasn't so much Europe that was causing a problem for the NBL. It was more China, because of the money. And Japan, there's quite a bit of money there to attract Americans. But it's obviously that's not so much of an issue anymore when you're getting a kid like RJ Hampton.
Let's jump to Didi. My question to you is, do you think he'll start this year? Has he got the chops to do it?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of people who would look at what he did in Summer League and say, yeah, he should start, because he looked incredibly comfortable, didn't he? I thought he played some really, really good minutes. And he's athletic, clearly. He can shoot the three, so that helps the Kings with their spacing. But at the end of the day, Brad Newley, let's face it, they also have an opportunity to get two imports. One of those might be a three. I don't think they will initially. We can get onto that later. But if you're talking about just the comparison between Didi and Newley, Newley's he's an older player, but he's been 34. In the system now. Yeah, he's 34. But then he's been in that system. He's been in the program. He knows the league back to front. He's still got it. You know, he's still athletic. He doesn't space the floor as well as he used to. I think his three-point shot is a little bit inconsistent. Yeah. But he's still got the ability to take it to the rack and finish strong. He's still a great defender. He rebounds. Bradley's incredibly hard at himself, and I know that from personal experience. He's probably too hard at himself. But I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and you know, he looks good. He looks ready, and he's already working out. And just from an experience standpoint, I think Brad will still start. And I think Didi will come off back the bench up initially. Yeah, I think he'll back him up and sort of have that be that spark off the bench.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the way it'll be. I just think Newley's numbers have certainly gone down. Like, you look at it 3 years ago when he first got with the Kings, 17.5 points, down to 11.8, down to 10.8 last season. Minutes as well, 33, 29, down to 25 last year. I think, and that was when his numbers were minutes and numbers were getting kind of pilfered by Brian Bowen. I think Didi's probably a little bit of a step up from Brian Bowen. But either way, it doesn't really matter who starts, it's just who finishes. But also the complement of the two. I just think the ability to swap one up for the other, you kind of get an older guy who's around and knows how to score on the move versus the young kid who's super athletic. So the complement of the two is kind of, in the aggregate, you're getting a really good player between them.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think one of the things that I would have liked to have seen a bit more last season with the Kings was Bowen and Newley actually playing together.
Agreed.
Yeah, they did a couple of times, but it wasn't enough. But when they did, I mean, that created a nightmare for offenses, particularly because of the way they defended on the perimeter as really athletic, really aggressive wings, and also kind of their skill set meshed pretty well. And I really wanted to see Brian play a little more of the two as well, just for his development and in sort of as a look forward to the NBA. So that will be interesting. Obviously, new coach Will Weaver, and he'll have his own ideas about how to utilize both of them. So that will be interesting, and obviously he's going to have a lot of flexibility with the lineup that he's got.
Yeah, let's talk about Weaver. And really, because I was coming into this year, I thought Rob Beveridge was a lock to coach his team for a number of reasons, not only his credentials but also his relationship with the likes of Bogut, Newley, and then within Sydney, you know, he had the sort of Sydney spirit thing, which is probably not the best experience, but you know, he had that Sydney connection. And they've gone with Weaver. That it's hard to compare the two. I hate to sort of juxtapose one to the other, but obviously, how close, my question to you, Matt, is how close was Beveridge to that coaching job? Did you see him coming in and out of Sydney office and make his pitch, or how'd that go?
Well, full disclosure, Rob and I are very close, and we have been for a number of years. So he's an exceptionally good friend of mine, and so I was on the phone with him daily when it was happening, yeah. Texting or whatever. He was extremely close, and it really came down to you can't say coin flip, but they went with Will. I was devastated for Rob, you know, because I think he would have done an outstanding job. I know he would have done an outstanding job. He along with Brian Gorgian, the two best coaches I've ever seen, because, you know, when you look at what Rob's done throughout his career, he's always been called the quintessential players coach. You know, you look at what he did with Illawarra, a team that he took to a semi-final and then a grand final in his first two seasons, and which was remarkable given the fact that, you know, he had by far and away the lower, he and Cairns, the Hawks and the Taipans had far and away the lowest budget, obviously. And yet he managed to take them, you know, as far as he did. And you know, obviously it wasn't as successful the last two seasons for a variety of reasons, which I won't get into. But I talked to Paul Smith, the Kings chairman, about what he said. And, yeah, look, he said that it was incredibly close, you know, that it was a very, very difficult decision. I believe him. Paul, ironically, is from Wollongong originally, but he...
Nobody's perfect.
don't tell him that. You know, it was... He didn't really go into detail as to why they picked Will. I think they love the fact that Will's kind of got that that background with the G League team, you know, and they did a tremendous job with Long Island, worked for Kenny Atkinson. He's obviously had that he's worked with Brett Brown. So when you look at the fact they're bringing in Chris Pondgrass as a former director of player personnel with the Memphis Grizzlies, so you've got that NBA connection.
They certainly marry up better than...
They kind of marry up. And I think I do think that had a lot to do with it. And I think they were just really impressed with Will and the way he carried himself, but I know for a fact that it was incredibly close because, you know, it literally came right down to the wire, right down to the last day, and they decided to go with Will. I told Paul Smith, full disclosure, I said, mate, it remains to be seen because about Will, and I've since met Will, and he's a tremendous guy, and I'm blown away by his intelligence, but the one thing with the Sydney Kings, and this is coming from someone who's been here since day one, that it's rarely worked when you've had a guy come into this program with no or very little coaching experience in the NBL. And, you know, and to his immense credit, Will's even acknowledged that to me. He said, look, you know, I'm going to be learning as much from the players and I've got a lot of work to do to study this league. And I think part of the fact that he came in as well is the fact that he, you know, being the assistant coach with the Boomers and having that relationship with, as you mentioned, with Bogut as well, he's had that relationship with Andrew. So there's no doubt that Andrew would have had to sign off on Will, given the fact that, you know, he's had that Boomers relationship with Will as well. So
yeah, that's
clearly
true.
You know, and so look, it's one of those situations where, you know, I hope we don't know what we're going to get out of Will. I know what I was going to get out of Rob Beveridge.
Exactly.
Because I just...
He was Rob the safe Beveridge. Hire. That's fair.
He was. There's no doubt. He was the safer bet. Now you're going with a guy who, you know, hasn't coached in the league before, and that's never worked with the Kings. But, you know, there's always a first time for everything. And it's funny because Will's going to be the 13th head coach in the history of the Sydney Kings. And I told him that. He said, oh, that's... 13, okay, that's my lucky number. It's going to be a great thing, isn't it?
It's going to have to be.
Yeah, it's going to have to be. But, yeah, look, my dealings with Will so far, I just, you know, and I've talked to a lot of people about him. I've gotten a lot of background on him, and there is not one person that says a bad word about him. Everybody is just absolutely in awe of the guy, in awe of his smarts, his coaching ability, the way he uses analytics. So he's, you know, and his relationship building, which is so huge and going to be so important in Sydney. Now, you know, I think with the team that they have, especially with the older guys.
Right. What I was going to say is the hire of Will Weaver, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but the hire of Weaver kind of suggests to me that, like, because if they were like this year or bust, because obviously Bogut's contract is up at the end of this year. He's got 10% ownership with the option to go to 50%, I believe, in the future.
Yeah, correct.
if you were working on that timeline where Bogut is finished retiring at the end of this year, potentially, you would have thought, all right, let's go Beveridge. We're pushing all of our chips in for this season. The fact that they've gone with a Will Weaver, however, may suggest that there's a bit more longevity to Bogut, that it may be a little bit more, he may go again. Do you think that's too much?
Look, it's hard to sort of draw that conclusion, but by the same token, I know that they will be extremely keen to get Bogey to go round for at least one more year after this one. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Look, personally, with a league that's only 28 games, even though we know every game's important, every game's intense, it's physical, it's tough. Mm. But, you know, I think Andrew could easily go for 2 or 3 years. He takes amazing care of his body. And Jeff in his podcast mentioned this, and he's absolutely spot on. I've seen it for myself up front. He's one of the most professional individuals I have ever, ever seen. I mean, he and Josh Childress, actually, probably two of the most professional guys in the way they do things, on and off the court, both of them, both Bogut and Chill. They are just outstanding in every way. And the way he takes care of his body, because he's been, you know, you can say he's injury prone. I mean, it's more accident prone. That's exactly what I was about to say, that it is more accident prone. I mean, you look at, he hasn't had any soft tissue injuries really to speak of, and touch wood, he doesn't.
It's more blunt force trauma.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the elbow was the big one, and he's had other things that have happened to him, which are just completely unfortunate, you know. And it's
like breaking his leg. It's a break of the leg. It's so bizarre.
He ran into a guy and broke his leg. So, yeah. So from that perspective, you know, it's usually guys at his age. It's the calves. It's the hammies. Old man. I call it the old man basketball injuries. You know, James Harvey, if you remember, you know, former player with the Wildcats, with the Gold Coast, with Sydney, West Sydney. You know, he suffered terribly with calf injuries towards the end of his career, and that's what you kind of look out for. We haven't seen that with Andrew at all, and I don't think so. And that's what makes me believe that he could go around for another year, maybe even 2 or 3 years. To be honest with you, it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, that's right. I think you could. And really, he's also smart enough to understand that if he stops being as effective as he is, if he isn't producing, then he will walk away. You know, there's no question about it. He's not one of these guys that's just going to hang on for just to play, just to hang on and collect a paycheck. He doesn't need the money. He's an incredibly rich man and a very smart man who's going to be very smart in business when he finishes. And he'll do a great job in ownership eventually when he goes. So, yeah, I think the bottom line is that they'll look at this year, obviously, but I think they are interested in the long game with Andrew. I think they're looking at hopefully convincing him to stay on another couple of years.
Speaking about staying on a couple of years, my next question, and this is a bit of a sort of bit of fun. If you could have retained one player from last year, knowing what you know now about the roster, obviously like Randall would make the best sense because Casper Ware's there, but looking at the roster as it is constructed on the Kings, who was there last year? Who would be the guy you'd think, okay, I'll retain them?
This is a tough one. Mm. He left the sport entirely, but I would say Tommy Wilson because of the...
All right, good answer.
And I think the reason I say that is because, you know, he people forget Andrew Bogut landed on his leg in preseason and basically put him back. He was out. You know, he was injured for about 3 or 4 weeks and really got well and truly behind the eight ball. And it took him a long, long time to come back. And when he did, he just didn't get the opportunity because, you know, the team, the backcourt was well and truly solid. When you've got Jerome Randall and Kevin Lish getting 30 minutes a game and then Kyle Adnam, you're really going to struggle to get minutes. But this kid, and we were talking about a former captain of the Australian junior team, we're talking about a kid who was maybe one of the most outstanding juniors for his age at the time in the world. Yeah. You know, he is ridiculously talented. And I'm not going to use the word tragedy, but I just think it's a shame that, you know, along with Hugh Greenwood's another one who, you know, when he was at New Mexico, he was playing with Cam Bairstow and they came out, they actually played the Kings in a preseason game at Bankstown Basketball Stadium. Mm. And that was one of the first games that we actually streamed on the internet, and he was outstanding in that game. Yeah, the New Mexico fans used to call him huge, not Hugh, huge. You hate to see that. You hate to see guys of that ability, of that talent, enormous talent, and with the size as well. You know, I think I loved what Kyle Adam did last year, and you know, sort of thinking about the questions, I think, yeah, they brought in Sean Bruce, who I love personally, but and Sean's older, but he's a little bit bigger. The one problem with Kyle is that you couldn't hide him defensively, and when Andrew Gaze played Kyle and Jerome at the same
time, it looked bad.
That was just death, because they were getting crushed on pick and rolls. They just they couldn't defend the pick and roll because those two guys are just too small, and that was the problem. But you know, Tom Wilson, 6'3", 6'4", handles the ball, a good shooter, but just had those great intangibles. You know, really intelligent, hardworking, loved the game. Just really has had a tough time. You know, obviously you had the problems at college. And where, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these kids are getting told certain things about these programs. And then when they get there, they find it's completely different, or the coach that recruited them leaves. And that's, you know, that can, and then the incoming coach, well, I didn't recruit you. I don't want you. I don't know you.
Yeah.
And these are the issues that they have. And he had that. Then he comes, you know, he was the Siebel MVP. You know, so now obviously I'm not saying Siebel's, you know, the NBL, there's still a large gap. However, it is a quality competition of its own right. And he did that. So that shows that once you gave him the opportunity, he was productive for you. And unfortunately, he just never got the opportunity with the Kings. I know they wanted to
retain. I never saw him play. Yeah. I never saw him play maybe 30 seconds of NBL.
Yeah. He just never got the opportunity. And that's where the sad thing comes.
That's where the sour taste is. Because it's not like he played poorly or didn't really mesh or, you know, it was blah. It was just you didn't even get a taste at all.
No, you just didn't. Yeah, from a Sydney perspective, they just never really saw what he was truly capable of. We saw it, kind of saw it in the preseason before he got hurt. But in terms of the regular season, no. You know, and that's the unfortunate thing, that we really never got a chance to see how good he could have been. And now he's lost to the game. He's playing for my AFL team, Collingwood. So it's not all bad from my perspective. But from a basketball perspective and from a Kings perspective, I just would have loved to have seen him get his chance.
Yeah, much agreed. Melbourne United really,
the
really had Sydney's, really had Sydney's number last year in those finals. Like that was a bit of that was a sweep in every sense of the word. What did you, when you were watching those games, were you looking at going, the number one thing that Sydney should address to beat a Melbourne United? Now the team has changed a lot, but the one thing they should do to beat this team, what would you put it down to, if anything?
It's an excellent question. I mean, I think, you know, the interesting thing is Josh Boone has really had great games against Andrew Bogut, for one. And now that's disappeared. And now we've got, Sean Long, and that which is really fascinating, because Bogut destroyed New Zealand last year with Long. So that it's kind of fascinating how that's kind of turned around, that Boone is a guy that gave Bogut a lot of problems. And yet, you know, they've got this guy incoming that really Bogut had his way with, you know, and that's the thing. Look, there's a variety of things. I just think the point guard situation, number one, and that's improved straight away, because Casper Ware was just outplayed.
He was unbelievable.
He just outplayed Jerome
Randle. Unbelievable. Game two, I mean, he had, five or six threes? I can't remember, but it just seemed like he had 10.
He just dominated. Yeah.
He really did dominate.
You know, no disrespect to Jerome, but at the end of the day, Casper Ware's a better player. I'm sorry. He just is. And people can criticise me for saying that. I don't care. I think I know enough, and I've watched the game long enough to know that we've got a choice between a guy who's, you know, in his own way is spectacular but can't defend, versus a guy who's an excellent defender and is a great two-way player and can score more efficiently, can score in a variety of ways, and has a great motor and a great attitude to the game. Not that Jerome didn't have those things, but I just think overall Casper Ware's a better player. So when you look at that and you look at the upgrade, the Kings, because to me it's an upgrade. I really believe they upgraded with Casper. And I know they were really looking very, very closely at him. You look at the fact that Boone's not there anymore. You know, obviously they've got a far more explosive player than they did. But then you sort of start asking yourself about the fit, because look at the talent they have is unbelievable. I mean, I would venture to say that's you know, we haven't had three imports in we were two imports in the league for a long period of time, obviously. Yeah. But there was a time where there were three imports back in the 80s before they changed it, mm-hmm. changed the rules. But you'd be struggling to come up with three better players, you know, or three more talented players, maybe, yeah. at least on paper. And then you add those to Chris Golding, Mitch McCarron, Alex Pledger, yeah. David Barlow, and you go, my God, they'll score 120 a game in a 40-minute game. It's yeah. just incredible. But I mean, and then Melo Trimble, you know, obviously at point. But the question mark I have about them is their defense at the 1-5. You know, I think as much as they've got a rim protector now at the 5, you know, better rim protector than what Boone was, he's not been seen to be a great one-on-one defender. And then Melo Trimble, it's well documented how he struggles defending you know, other point guards in the league, even though I think he did a better job in the last couple of months of that season for the Taipans. So, yeah, that's interesting. On paper, you kind of look at them and go, this is a juggernaut. They definitely have question marks at the 4 spot.
Barlow's getting older, and I mean, if he goes down, I don't know who fills that spot. You know, they don't have a Venky Joyce again, who could have been serviceable. Toby Smith-Milner's around, but you know, that's, they're really banking on a guy who's now, you know, mid 30s.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think they'll play a lot of small ball too. You know, I think that's going to happen as well.
Do you think they could do that? Trimble, McCarron, CG43, Prather, and Long.
Absolutely. I think they will. I think you know, Dean Vickerman's a tremendous coach and a guy that you know will be he'll appreciate the fact that he's got all these toys to play with, and he will let them play. There's no doubt about that. And I think you will see a bit of small ball at times. You know, it's something obviously the Kings tried without that much success. You know, when you had Blanchfield playing the 4 spot when he was here a couple of years ago, that didn't work, clearly. But I think with this group, you know, I think they could get away with it. The thing about, and the reason you get away with it, really, the key that not many people talk about is McCarron. Because McCarron is unbelievable on the offensive glass. He's an excellent defender. Yeah. He's as strong as a bull, and he's a great athlete. And he can, you know, he can give you that rebounding that you might need. And we've seen that from him time and time again. So it's a lineup and an alignment that Vickerman could go with. Now, I'm not saying you go with it 35 minutes a game, clearly. I mean, it's only a situational thing. But I think that's what they'll look to do play that. And I think, you know, to be honest with you, that's the question mark is going to be minutes with David. But I think they'll be very judicious with it because of his age, because of his injury history as well. He's been fairly injury-free of late, but he's getting up in age. And I talked about that earlier, you know, with Bogut and some of the other guys of the past, that when they get to a point in their career when they're in their mid-30s and there's a lot of mileage on their bodies, and with David, there's a ton of mileage on his body. You look at all the work, going back for the Kings and then with Melbourne and with the Tigers. And then, I mean, it's a lot. And all the Australian, the work with the Australian team that he's done as well. So, they're going to be, who's kidding ourselves if we think they aren't a championship contender, even with they're just incredible. The talent is unbelievable.
I try and keep one thing intact because I do think their best player last year was Casper Ware, and he's now playing elsewhere. Sean Long is a very good player, but, you know, was the starting center on a team that finished sixth or seventh. And he had his fingerprints on a lot of those, the way they played and the reason why they didn't excel as well as they might have. My question to you is, when you watched that Melbourne-Perth series, did you feel like that team, in its way it was, with Casper and DJ Kennedy, Boone, McCarron, and so forth, did you feel like this team should, even with a few minor changes, like let's say they took out DJ Kennedy, put in a Casey Prather, do you feel like that team needed a few changes, or was this major overhaul a necessity?
Well, I don't know if you can call it a necessity. I don't know what the situation was with Casper in terms of...
I was about
of,
to ask. That's the
do you and that's know, the thing.
Casper's coming to Sydney. Do you know much about that? Was he discontent in Melbourne? Or?
No, I know that... The Phoenix, I've heard the Phoenix were very big on him. You know, like they really went after him hard. I do know that for a fact. But I think,
That would have been a good story.
Yeah, well, I think that it was kind of a lot of people were putting two and two together and thinking, well, it makes obvious if Melbourne and he can't come to an agreement, then Phoenix makes the perfect, it's a perfect situation. They needed a point guard. Yeah, it's across the road, and imagine the welcome back Casper game that we will get. But now for Sydney, it sort of may have meant more with the Phoenix. But regardless, yeah, look, it's interesting. You know, I think with Boone, you know, I sort of talked about it, the fact that he was dominant against Bogut, but I think there was a school of thought that he was slowing down a bit, and I think that he kind of slowed them down a little bit, and I think they perhaps want to run a little more this year, and it's clearly when you get a Prather and you get, you know, Melo Trimble, and you've got an Chris who loves to run, and Sean Long, and you kind of have all these guys, and it's like, okay, well, it's a team that's built to really attack in transition. That's what they're there for, and yeah, they've still got Pledger, Smith, Milner, kind of the slow guys, but they'll only play 10-15 minutes, you would expect. And they really probably won't change up too much. But, yeah, I think they were very good in the half court, obviously, but I think that transition game was a bit of an issue for them, which, you know, when obviously Tarico White, and they've addressed it clearly. So it's, I mean, look, sometimes they've been so successful over the last couple of years. I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, they've made two straight grand finals. They won a championship. They've made, significant changes, but the talent level, if anything, is probably the best they've had in the 3 years.
Just overall.
So when you look at it from that perspective, and I've got the highest respect for Dean Bickerman as a coach. I think he's outstanding, just a great guy, great communicator, terrific with the X's and O's. He's a good development guy. He will have that team humming, I believe, and they're going to be an enormous threat to win it all again.
And I think the guy who they're actually going to, who wouldn't be, it's not a sexy name as far as they're missing him, but I think they're really going to miss Craig Moller. A serviceable backup for him and Barlow was splitting those minutes quite comfortably. Now I don't know who, I don't know who fills Barlow, sorry, I don't know who fills Moller's shoes.
I agree with that. That was a big loss.
I was shocked when he came to Sydney. He looked like he wanted to take a big bite out of more playing time and things, and Sydney was not that option. So it seems kind of, I was a bit thrown off by that.
Yeah, look, I mean, again, full disclosure, his agent happens to be my best friend. So so I kind of know how that all went down. I won't get into it. But needless to say that, I mean, he felt like he wasn't getting the minutes, you know, that he wanted in Melbourne. And I think that was fair. You know, I don't think he's another one that kind of didn't quite get the opportunities last season. Perhaps he got the season before when they won the championship. And I think, you know, he is obviously he's a Sydney guy. You know, his family's here, and the Kings came to the party and offered him a chance to play, you know, meaningful minutes, which is really all he wants. And you know, I think you're right. That will be an underrated loss for them because, you know, how many 6'9", 6'10" guys that run the floor could shoot the three?
It's a really underpopulated spot in the NBL, definitely next season.
And for the Kings, he'll get those minutes. And the thing is that he'll back up minute. He'll play back up at the 3-4. You know, so he'll get 15-20 minutes a game backing up both positions because he can swing to the three. He's shown he can do that. He can stretch the floor with his perimeter shooting.
Yeah, for sure. Quickly, I'm on sportsbet.com.au at the minute. They've got the odds up. Melbourne, $3, rather predictably. Perth, $5.50. Sydney Kings, $5.50, tied second. Guess who's next on the list at
$8? $8. Who would be $8?
I don't think it's Brisbane Bullets.
It's funny. I was nearly going to say Brisbane. Yeah, that's crazy. I don't see that at all.
I don't see that. Guess who's next at $10?
Well, the Illawarra
Hawks. Go back to Brisbane. Why don't you see Brisbane there?
There's just too many question marks about them. Yeah. You know, and I think the import they've got, losing Patterson and Bairstow, that's a significant chunk of your offense right there. You know, he was a beast. He was an absolute beast. And Yeah, oh, completely. And kind of reminded me a little bit of Paul George, the way he played, you know, sort of that guy who could score from anywhere, you know, give you 6 or 7 boards. He was a good passer, pretty good defender, but just an impact guy, you know. And now they've brought in this guy who's clearly not an impact guy. And I'm just hoping for Bullet fans that we're not seeing David Ware 2.0, because, you know, David Ware was a disaster for the Kings. And I have no compunction in saying that at all. I just think Ware was terrible, and it was. And I told Jeff, I said that was one of your big mistakes. He was dreadful. So I hope, from a Brisbane perspective, that Taylor Braun isn't that guy. They say I just worry about imports when they talk about, oh, he does a little bit of everything. Well, that indicates
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, that's right. And I've heard that time and time again over the years with imports. And I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, you want to see a successful Brisbane team, but it does concern me. And obviously, you know, they're looking for another import to come in. But, it's a strange one. And I think Perth's way too long, too. I think 550 for Perth, you're kidding. They should be equal favourites with Melbourne. You know, they've still got – they have – any team that's got Damian Martin and Bryce Cotton in the backcourt – just to a starters, then you bring back Tarico White, then you've got Nick Kay, then you've got Mitch Norton.
Yeah, yes, prime. Nick Kay is 26. Prime. Mitch Norton is 20, same age, all I think. Not injured.
You know that, and that was one of the unfortunate things. You know, getting back to Bevo just quickly. That was one of the unfortunate things for Illawarra, that they couldn't keep those guys. You know, like they were two guys when they came across from Townsville after Townsville fell over. They were two guys that were going to be guys to build around, to build your program around. And that was a devastating blow. Yeah. And the Wildcats are incredible. I mean, I've got just massive respect for them as an organization. I've got enormous respect for Damian Martin as a player too. He's just competitiveness. So I've never seen anything like him. His will to win
would have been a real long shot if Beveridge had come to the Kings and he'd said, you know what? Damian Martin, we go back a long way. Never going to happen. But
believe me, Bevo would have tried. There's no doubt about it. He would have tried. He would have taken a shot at young Mr. Martin's. No doubt about it. He would have.
Taken a shot. We're talking about Perth. I mean, what I think is interesting is everyone's like, oh, you know, they haven't done a lot. And I say, well, let's just say that their team was completely out of contract. And they'd gone ahead and lost Brandt, but re-signed Cotton and Tarico White and Kay and everything. Like, yes, they haven't acquired new talent, but you know they have signed. But the fact that he played with the team last year is kind of irrelevant. They have signed last year's finals MVP.
Yeah,
you know, like that is a huge move. Huge. He looked like he was going elsewhere. I had my fierce worry he wasn't returning to the league, let alone the Wildcats, and he has. And, you know, so I think people don't see the forest, for the trees, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think, you bring in Majuk, who's a guy that I think is very underrated, you know, and he's...
And hungry for a bad year.
Yeah, and just a big banger, you know, a real tough guy.
Good in China.
Yeah, he's not going to play. He's not going to be a starter. They have been very clear on their need for a big five at that import spot. But as we've said before, they still have a next star spot open. And Trevor Gleeson has shown that he's a very, very, very clever recruiter. He's a great look. He's one of the greatest coaches ever as well that's ever coached in this league. And the fact of the matter is that their culture, I can't emphasize enough. It's the ultimate intangible that the Wildcats have is that culture of theirs. It's basically keyed by everything that Damian Martin does. He's sort of they take their cues from him, but you know they're still bringing in enormous talent, and they've still got access to great talent. And look, they've had their issues with imports over the years. I think every team has. But by the same token, when they strike gold, boy, do they strike gold! You know, Bryce Cotton and then Tarico White, you're two guys that are finals MVPs, and you know Bryce Cotton is just unstoppable when he gets going. There's no one in this league that can touch him when he's on. And Damian Martin, yeah, he's like, look, he'd admit it. He's lost half a step, but there's no better competitor, I believe, probably in the history of the NBL. I've seen the NBL since day one. Yeah. And the beauty of it is, with all the stuff around LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton and
the Kings getting Casper Ware, and then obviously Melbourne, you know, stacking their roster and with Prather and Sean Long and Melo Trimble. No one's really talking about Perth, and they love it. They would love it. They'd use it as fuel for the fight. It's like, guess what? We're being disrespected again. Great. There's Trevor's like, beautiful. More bulletin board material for me. It fuels them. It's unbelievable. You know, that they are the ultimate us against them. That whole mentality of that city and that whole state, it's them against the rest of Australia. That's how they view it. That's why they, you know, it's one of the things when Nick Marvin, who I had a lot to do with when he was the CEO of the Wildcats, he once said to me, he said, that's one of our big strengths. The fact that I said to him, how do you get 13, 14,000 people regularly through the door at Perth Arena? As a rabid, back then? Yeah, and they're all rabid and they're all wearing red and it's the Red Army. He said, well, it really is what we've really keyed into is this us against them mentality. It's really us against the rest of Australia. It's like Perth is this, it's almost like Western Australia is a completely separate country and everybody else is kind of looking to invade us and we want to turn them back. That's part of it. So that's one of the big keys about the Wildcats is that amazing culture that they have.
After Brisbane at $8, guess who's next? There's a two-way tie on $10.
So I'd have to say the Phoenix would be one of them.
They are one.
Yeah. And then the other, I presume, would be Illawarra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think putting them ahead of Adelaide is... quite like Adelaide are $21 second bottom to Cairns at the very bottom.
Yeah.
What do they think about New Zealand at $12? I just think...
I think, again, it's funny with these betting companies. It just depends who works for the betting company and who is actually setting the odds. Now, it may be someone who's just looking, who might be a casual fan looking at the fact, oh, wow, you know, New Zealand have signed, RJ or Illawarra has signed LaMelo Ball.
For them.
Yeah, or just the average punter has gone, oh, wow, LaMelo Ball, or they've heard about RJ Hampton, or even this early.
There's an open line on LaMelo Ball to win the NBL MVP at $24.
$24.
I know. I'd be thinking more $240.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
That is no disrespect to LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, if it gets back to Lamar, he won't be happy about it. But us talking about that. But yeah, I think that has a bit to do with it. You know, in terms of, I've known guy. I mean, there's been friends of mine that have actually worked for these betting companies and a couple of them have over the year, you know, a few years ago, I remember one of them rang me up and sort of, you know, was grilling me about the teams and kind of getting a bit of a scout for every team because they wanted to set the odds properly. But I think, you know, as I said, it just depends on who's there, who's actually setting the odds, how much research are they doing? It's easy to kind of just point at certain things and go, Melbourne, Perth, Sydney. But then when you sort of get down to those kind of longer mid-range teams, that's when they're probably just looking at things like, you know, wow, LaMelo Ball, you know, his brother plays in the NBA. Wow, AJ Hampton, everyone says he's going to be in the NBA. So the odds are not going to be, maybe we shouldn't put them as high as what you and I probably think they should be.
The schedule came out today. I'm looking at the start of the season for the Kings and have a listen to this. First game at Cairns. Next game against Adelaide at home. Next game, New Zealand at home. Away to New Zealand, Brisbane at home, Brisbane on the road. And then it's their first game against anyone from the top four other than Brisbane. Melbourne United, November 4th in Melbourne. That's a pretty good start to the year for the Kings.
It's probably as far as from a strength of schedule is concerned, I think they've done very well. I think, and again, you sort of hate to say this because the competition's so close and it will be so close. And
Adelaide games will be tough.
Adelaide in the last 2 years, the Kings have played Adelaide in their home season opener and got whacked both times. So even with Bogut. So that's actually one of the key reasons that the Kings decided not to pursue the NBA games because they have had an impact. There's no question about that. They've definitely had an impact on their early season form in the last couple of years. So that was a decision. There were other reasons, but that was one of the reasons.
Makes sense.
And you sort of look at it and you go, I think
the schedules, the big one that kind of, you know, Adelaide, Melbourne, Brisbane run is, you know, all on the road, three road games within what, about 7 days?
Yeah.
Early in the piece, that's going to be huge. But other than that, they really don't have too many doubles. You know, there's a lot of, sort of single games. And then the other thing that sort of stands out, and even Chris Pondgrass, I think, has said this publicly, is when you look at the back end of the schedule leading into the playoffs, they've got three weeks in a row where they're only playing one game. And for an older team, you know, and they are an older team with
a FIBA break. Bogarts,
plus that. Well, that's right. And, you know, that should help them be relatively fresh, assuming that you're not. I'm not going to assume anything when it comes to the Kings over the years, but assuming they're in that position to make a playoff run, I think the schedule's done them, done them pretty well overall.
I think looking at last year, like one thing I had to worry about this team, and maybe I'm way off my hinges, but something I noticed, I just didn't feel like afternoon games. Oh, I'm getting a call. Sorry, Matt.
You're all right, mate.
Hi, Claire. How are you doing? Do you mind if I just call you back? I'm just on the phone. Hello? Sorry, Matt. I'll call you right back in about 15, 20 minutes? No. Okay. All right. I'll call you in a bit. All right. Ciao. Sorry, Matt. That's all right. Afternoon games. I just felt like the team felt sluggish in the afternoon. You know, like the gear up for a evening start, say 5 or 7 o'clock, it just feels more... it's a bit easier to get up for. I had a look at it. Afternoon games last year, they went 8-9, losing some games to teams they really should have beat. Like, as you said, they lost to an Adelaide, was a winnable game. They lost to Illawarra twice in a row in these afternoon games where they got really, really badly whacked. Mm. You know, I looked at it. They probably should have run 12. They went 8-9 in afternoon games last year. And I didn't actually look quite closely at the schedule to see whether they've got a huge amount of afternoon games. But I think with Bogut on the team, they always wanted to go in the afternoon to get on the free-to-air telly on 90, channel Go. That's my one concern with this team. Did you notice that last year, or am I thinking too much?
Yeah, I don't know. You might be overthinking it. There would be other reasons for it as well, you know. But it's whether it's injury, whether it's form at the time, whether it's a team that gets hot against them or whatever it might be. Who knows? You could be right. I didn't notice that so much, to be honest with you. But okay. There's always reasons why teams don't do as well in certain games against certain opponents. And playing in the afternoon versus playing at night could be one of them. Who knows?
I'll keep my eye on it. My next question is USA versus Canada. What are you doing for that?
At the moment, nothing. I haven't decided whether I'm going to go as yet. Mm-hmm. I think, the one thing about the, not to down it, because I think it'd be, you know, a great event, but probably the Americans are not quite as strong as what we would hope, because obviously mm-hmm. Davis is not going to be there. LeBron won't be there. KD won't be there. And I think they were the sort
There's
of the
a
headline
big difference.
Guys.
In the USA poster that came out a little while ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Big faces on it, and now not quite so big.
The Canadian team, by the way, is really, really strong. You know, they are going to be, if they get all their NBA guys, when you look at the likes of, you know, Jamal Murray, RJ Barrett's another one who, obviously played for Duke University. Wiggins is another one.
Kelly Olynyk,
Tristan Thompson. They've got, there's a whole bunch, and I'm probably missing about 5 or 6 guys. And then who's their coach? Well, just the guy that won the NBA championship. Yeah, so, right. This is the thing that, and it worries me a little bit with Australia, because from a World Cup standpoint, they're talking about medals. It's people are sort of saying there almost seems to be a feeling in the average sports community that given all our NBA guys and all the talent that we have, that we should win a medal, and it's going to be tough. Yeah. Really but tough. I mean, in terms of the US Canada game. Yeah. I mean, look, worst comes to worst. So I might sneak into Kudos at some stage and flash a pass around, see if that gets me in. I don't know about paying $1,200 for a courtside seat. Oof. I mean, it's massive.
It's monopoly money. One last question I'll end on is, journalism stuff. So when you're sitting there watching a game, and I've often found this myself, and I try to remain analytical when I'm watching games, What's your process when you're watching? Have you got a notepad that you're writing, handwriting notes, or when you're calling a game? Like, what do you do from a professional standpoint? And what's your process before, after, during?
Well, it's interesting because it's kind of changed for me over the last few years, because doing the work that I've done in radio and doing, the TV work that I've done, your focus changes, because what I tend to do is sort of try and do a lot of pre-work. And then obviously you've got a notepad and you're jotting down you're trying to get scores and you're jotting down, key moments in a game, I guess. But when I was just doing it, and I was just doing the game reports for the Kings or for the NBL for that matter, pretty much it's just, you're writing it as you go. So essentially you're kind of, writing out obviously you're not describing every play, but you're kind of doing it quarter by quarter, key moments. That kind of thing. And then when it comes time to actually, get it out there, then you sort of write your bylines and your key moments the quotes from the presser and what have you. But it's definitely it's interesting. It's definitely changed. I mean, the one thing I would say to anybody that wants to sort of do it is preparation, research are the keys. You just have to know what you're talking about. You have to know people ask me, about what I do to prepare for all the games that I call, and really that's it. It's prep. That's prep is 90%. I mean, obviously you have to have the ability to do it, and not everyone can be a play-by-play caller, but I refuse to go into any game. I mean, I've done games where I've had to call from the television, mind you, Team China versus the NBL All-Star team. And, you get given this list of players that might be playing. So you might get a list of 20 players a few days before the game. And obviously not all 20 are going to play. And you don't, because it's China, you don't know who's going to play on the night. So what you have to do is research every one of those guys and do the pronunciation, what's their background, you trawl through the various websites, the CBA website, the Asia Hoops website. That's been fantastic actually for me, and work your way through that. So I became intimately familiar with the Chinese national team and all their iterations thereof. And purely it's because you just have to be prepared to put in the work. I mean, there's a lot of people that sort of look at what you do from a play-by-play perspective and think it's easy. It's not. And not just you calling, but then having to work in your analyst or your analysts, plural, whether it's one or two, and then the guy might be on the sideline doing that, working through your producer and your breaks and then being able to tell that story of what's happening without over-describing. And I think one of the things when I first started was, even in radio, I tended to over-talk and over-describe things. But you learn these things as you go along and you get better at it. But, especially with television, if it's there, they can see what's going on. Your job is to make it as exciting as possible, to be as informative as possible, but mainly as well to really give your analysts as much airtime as you can, because they're the ones that are the experts. They're going to be ex-players, they're going to be ex-coaches. They're the guys that really have the smart things to say. You can describe the action as much as you want, but they're the guys that are going to have that tremendous insight that people really want to know.
Yeah. If I may, one last question. What's your favorite? I always ask people, are you a books guy? Actually, we'll talk about that quickly. Matt Logue's new book, Hoop Dreams Down Under. You read it? What do you like? Yep. Do you like it?
I'm actually, I was at his book launch, actually. Matty's a really good friend of mine. He's a brilliant journalist, and I've got to say this, the Sydney Kings are so lucky to have this guy as an advocate, because he's the lead writer for the Daily Telegraph, which has the biggest circulation of any paper in the country, and he has to fight day in, day out with the paper that really their whole focus is the NRL, let's be brutally honest, and he has to scrap and claw for every piece, every column inch that he gets, and he loves the sport so much. He's a fantastic guy. He's also a great writer, and we are so lucky to have him. I'm loving the book. I'm just reading about my good friend Jonah Bolden at the moment, and obviously, his dad's a really good friend of mine, and I've known Jonah since he was 10. And so it's been phenomenal to watch him. But yeah, Hoop Dreams is fantastic. And it's interesting because I've actually been in the process for the last, well, it's coming on 10 years now of writing a book about the history of the Sydney Kings. And I've, you know, written about, I think I've done about 150,000 words already. So it's been a bit of a stop-start situation with trying to get it published, but I'm hopeful that one day we shall see.
And well, I'd read it.
I actually, I said
that much.
Oh, thanks, mate. Well, I said to Matt, I actually said to him, you know, you've given me inspiration to sort of really start pushing it, you know, with to get it done. So hopefully it will happen, and he's even offered to help out. So we'll, you never know. You might see it in the next 3 or 4 months. We'll see.
Because that'd be one I'd read. I mean, the thing I will say is, and Matt Logue's book is more, I'd say it's not so much NBL, more NBA. But yeah. It's there are very few books on the NBL. I mean, you would join Rare Air. You know, I think Bonnie Nudge has got Marvelous and a couple others.
Yeah.
If it's more than between 5 and 10, I'd be really blown away. My question is, what have you got any NBL books that you know of that are accessible that people can get their hands on anywhere?
Or? Yeah, well, it's a good question. I've got about 6 or 7 of them.
Okay.
You know, what you're talking about Cal Bruton's book, Making a Dream Come True, Pac Pearl, Marvelous, you mentioned.
Yep.
The Andrew Gaze story that Bradley Bernard wrote. Boom by Brett Harris, which is really about the early days of the NBL.
Yep.
That's an outstanding one because it really goes in depth in the sort of the early days and then into what was called the boom. It's sort of a similar structure to Matt's actually in terms of the chapters are all about individuals. So there's a chapter about Bob Turner. There's a chapter about Mike Wroblewski.
Right. I like that thing about Matt Logue's, where you can sort of read one chapter, put it down. And it's not, there's a river between them all, but you don't have to read it in order. I've actually read it out of order.
Absolutely. So Damien Kerr's one, which was the, Big Business, Sport Big Business and Me, which was really about his time at the Kings and his sort of dealings with Mike Wroblewski primarily, which I loved. That was a great book. And
that was called What Business by who, sorry?
Yeah, Damien Kerr. He wrote it with Ian Cockerell. It's available. I know it's available at the State Library in New South Wales, but as far as on the shelves, and Boom wouldn't be available anywhere. It really is. I can't remember the last time there was an NBL book, and that's part NBL book. And that was actually part of the reason that I wanted to do this. And it's the book itself is kind of morphed because part of the book there's obviously a whole lot of different chapters, but there's two chapters that I do which are fairly extensive. One talks about the early days pre-NBL. And then the second one, which is really important, talks about the teams that came before the Kings in the NBL. So, you know, where it was City of Sydney. Even before that, the Astronauts. That's what they were called originally, City of Sydney Astronauts. They then became the Supersonics in 1982. And then in obviously the Bankstown Bruins, who became the West Sydney West Stars in 85. And then... It ended up becoming they joined forces to become Sydney Kings for the first season in 1988. So there's a lot of that stuff that of course I grew up with those. You know, that's what got me into basketball, and I grew up, you know, idolizing those players. So I was a Supersonics fan, Astronauts fan actually, when I was a kid, because I first started getting into basketball in 1979, which gives away my age. I'm, pretty old. That's all right. But, I'm ancient. But, it's a real shame that, the history aspect of it really isn't, because there's some tremendous stories out there. Historically,
I remember there used to be year by year encyclopedias, the 91 season encyclopedia.
Well, the NBL used to produce a fantastic media guide, and I've got media guides that go back, years and years and years, and full of stats. And, they talked about they had kind of a breakdown of each roster, and it was fantastic. And I mean, even the Kings, in conjunction with the Sydney Morning Herald at the time, produced in 1992 a massive. It was a magazine. It was a season preview magazine,
which had like profiles of all the players. And then talked about great photo. Amazing stuff. But unfortunately, you know, the league sort of doesn't really do that anymore. A lot of stuff is digitized, admittedly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a two-edged sword. Like, it not only does it's just not the way people consume the media anymore, but there's still the avenue to make that sort of content, and maybe it takes the content is still being able to be made, maybe in a slightly different form, whether it's an audio book, documentary video, online article. You know, there's still the content should still be thrust forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, absolutely, I agree. I mean, and I'm look, as I've said, I'm old, so therefore I'm old school. So I think, you know, as much as the internet has been fantastic in terms of bringing everything closer together and making everything more accessible, you know, particularly from an NBA perspective. I mean, back in the day, you know, I remember in 1986, you know, I'm a huge Boston Celtics fan. I'll argue with anyone, I'm the biggest Boston Celtics fan in this country, and a lot of my friends would say that as well. But I remember there was no internet back then, so you had to get your scores via, you know, the Sydney Morning Herald in that sports section, you know, where they kind of had that summary, and so you just get a score. Yeah, well, I used to write.
You just look and you're like, wow, Charlotte lost to Boston 95-101. I wonder what happened.
It's interesting you bring that up. I wrote for them. So I wrote from 1999 to when we shut down in 2005. I had a regular, I did all their previews. I did features regular. Yeah, so and that's what Ewan Cornish, who was he basically published it. And that's, again, pre-internet. And he used to print all the scores. People loved it. Yeah, we'd have pages and pages of box scores.
And a few profiles and... I don't know if I still have some copies today. They're probably all turned yellow because it was a genuine newspaper.
Weekly newspaper that we did. Yeah. It was a real shame when it left, actually, but never mind. Yeah.
Matt, be in touch, all right? But all right, Matt, we appreciate you doing this. And I'll catch you on the radio.
Okay, mate. Talk soon.
Ciao.